This is podcast number 165 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson. Today we turn to Abraham Lincoln. Today is April 15th, not a favorite day for many Americans scrambling to get their taxes filed. But today is also the 154th anniversary of the day Abraham Lincoln died. He had been shot the night before, Good Friday, while watching a play with his wife at Ford's Theater, and passed away without regaining consciousness about 7 o'clock the next morning on April 15th. Those who were there said his face relaxed into a smile when death came. I just finished recording a favorite book about Lincoln written by Wilbur Gordy that you'll find at mybelmonde.com. Belmonde is with one L, B-E-L-M-O-N-D-E, E at the end. mybelmonde.com, under Month 8, Abraham Lincoln. This book will not only help you and your children begin to appreciate this giant of a man in every way, they will get a clear overview of key Civil War events without getting bogged down in details. I would guess it would appeal to upper elementary and older age children. As I read it aloud, I was swept into the emotion of the story and could almost feel the heavy weight Lincoln bore on his shoulders. No one thought this backwoodsman was capable of doing the job, and they didn't hesitate to let him know. Yet, with a firm faith in the guiding hand of Providence, he navigated the stormy seas and brought the ship of state safely to port. After the crushing pressure he had been under, I can well imagine his face relaxing into a smile. We owe so much to this man, and each year as I return to him in the rotation schedule, I learn another facet of his character and personality that makes me love him even more. One of his most enduring qualities was his sense of humor, as well as his storytelling, and I thought you might enjoy a letter he wrote. I'll let it speak for itself, but I smile just thinking about it. Here is the letter. A letter from Abraham Lincoln to Mrs. Browning, Springfield, April 1st, 1838. Dear Madam, without apologizing for being egotistical, I shall make the history of so much of my life as has elapsed since I last saw you the subject of this letter. And, by the way, I now discover that, in order to give a full and intelligible account of the things I have done and suffered since I saw you, I shall necessarily have to relate some that happened before. It was, then, in the autumn of 1836 that a married lady of my acquaintance, and who was a great friend of mine, being about to pay a visit to her father and other relatives residing in Kentucky, proposed to me that, on her return, she would bring a sister of hers with her on condition that I would engage to become her brother-in-law with all convenient dispatch. I, of course, accepted the proposal, for you know I could not have done otherwise had I really been averse to it. But privately, between you and me, I was most confoundedly well pleased with the project. I had seen the said sister some 3 years before, thought her intelligent and agreeable, and I saw no good objection to plodding life through hand in hand with her. Time passed on, the lady took her journey, and in due time returned, sister in company, sure enough. This stomached me a little, for it appeared to me that her coming so readily showed that she was a trifle too willing. But on reflection, it occurred to me that she might have been prevailed on by her married sister to come without anything concerning me ever having been mentioned to her. And so I concluded that, if no other objection presented itself, I would consent to waive this. All this occurred to me on hearing of her arrival in the neighborhood. For, be it remembered, I had not yet seen her, except about 3 years previous, as above mentioned. In a few days we had an interview, and although I had seen her before, she did not look as my imagination had pictured her. I knew she was oversized, but she now appeared a fair match for Falstaff. I knew she was called an old maid, but I felt no doubt of the truth of at least half of the appellation. But now, when I beheld her, I could not for my life avoid thinking of my mother, and this not from withered features, for her skin was too full of fat to permit of its contracting into wrinkles, but from her want of teeth, weather-beaten appearance in general, and from a kind of notion that ran in my head that nothing could have commenced at the size of infancy and reached her present bulk in less than 35 or 40 years. And in short, I was not at all pleased with her. But what could I do? I had told her sister I would take her for better or for worse, and I made a point of honor and conscience in all things to stick to my word, especially if others had been induced to act on it, which in this case I had no doubt they had, for I was now fairly convinced that no other man on earth would have her, and hence the conclusion that they were bent on holding me to my bargain. Well, thought I have said it, and, be the consequences what they may, it shall not be my fault if I fail to do it. At once I determined to consider her my wife, and this done, all my powers of discovery were put to work in search of perfections in her which might be fairly set off against her defects. I tried to imagine her handsome, which, but for her unfortunate corpulency, was actually true. Exclusive of this, no woman that I have ever seen has a finer face. I also tried to convince myself that the mind was much more to be valued than the person, and in this she was not inferior, as I could discover to any with whom I had been acquainted. Shortly after this, without coming to any positive understanding with her, I set out for Vandalia, when and where you first saw me. During my stay there, I had letters from her which did not change my opinion of either her intellect or intention, but on the contrary confirmed it in both. All this while, although I was fixed, firm as the surge-repelling rock in my resolution, I found I was continually repenting the rashness which had led me to make it. Through life I have been in no bondage, either real or imaginary, from the thraldom of which I so much desired to be free. After my return home, I saw nothing to change my opinion of her in any particular. She was the same, and so was I. I now spent my time in planning how I might get along through life after my contemplated change of circumstances should have taken place, and how I might procrastinate the evil day for a time, which I really dreaded as much, perhaps more, than an Irishman does the halter. After all my suffering upon this deeply interesting subject, here I am, wholly, unexpectedly, completely, out of the scrape. And now I want to know if you can guess how I got out of it. Out, clear in every sense of the term, no violation of word, honor, or conscience. I don't believe you can guess, and so I might as well tell you at once. As the lawyer says, it was done in the manner following, to wit. After I had delayed the matter as long as I thought I could in honor due, which, by the way, had brought me round into the last fall, I concluded I might as well bring it to a consummation without further delay, and so I mustered my resolution and made the proposal to her direct. But, shocking to relate, she answered no. At first I suppose she did it through an affection of modesty which I thought but ill became her under the peculiar circumstances of her case, but on my renewal of the charge I found she repelled it with greater firmness than before. I tried it again and again, but with the same success, or rather with the same want of success. I finally was forced to give it up, at which I very unexpectedly found myself mortified almost beyond endurance. I was mortified, it seemed to me, in 100 different ways. My vanity was deeply wounded by the reflection that I had been too stupid to discover her intentions, and at the same time never doubting that I understood them perfectly, and also that she, whom I had taught myself to believe nobody else would have, had actually rejected me with all my fancied greatness. And to cap the whole, I then for the first time began to suspect that I was really a little in love with her. But let it all go. I'll try and outlive it. Others have been made fools of by the girls, but this can never with truth be said of me. I most emphatically, in this instance, made a fool of myself. I have now come to the conclusion never again to think of marrying, and for this reason, I can never be satisfied with anyone who would be blockhead enough to have me. When you receive this, write me a long yarn about something to amuse me. Give my respects to Mr. Browning, your sincere friend, A. Lincoln.